This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. Make every moment unforgettable with Stella Artois. Whether at home with a cozy dinner or dining out, Stella Artois adds a touch of sophistication to any occasion. Stella Artois, a taste worth more. Enjoy responsibly. Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. On today's show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a new restaurant I think you'll want to learn more about. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She is a former commercial real estate developer and a marketing expert, Monica Dano. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Thanks for doing this. Let's dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, the Houston Chronicle has released its annual list of the top 100 restaurants in Houston for 2024. Just briefly, the top 10 in order, number one, Totemo, two, Katami, three, March, four, Neo, five, Theodore Rex, six, Little's Oyster Bar, seven, Cultivare, eight, Truth Barbecue, nine, Street to Kitchen, and 10, MF Lobster and Seafood. You know what, Monica, why don't I start there? What do you think about that as the top 10 restaurants in Houston?
You know, first of all, I think clearly they were trying to get this out before Michelin came out, or maybe it comes out this week every single year. I don't remember. I know it's sometime in October. Is that right?
Yeah, it's usually in October.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they were under the gun to make sure that, you know, they beat Michelin to the punch so it didn't look lazy if they picked some of those.
Well, you know, I wonder about that because I don't think they're that. It's funny because, you know, as you kind of dive in, there's 25 restaurants that are ranked, yep, 1 through 25, and then everything else is alphabetical. And, you know, two restaurants that we're pretty sure are going to get Michelin stars are BCN, the Spanish fine dining restaurant, and Le Jardinet, the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. They're both in the alphabetical section. So they are, according to the Chronicle, not two of the 25 best restaurants in Houston. So I don't know that they're that, like, or at the very least, what Michelin is doing is not of any concern to them, right? It's not shaping what the Chronicle's doing.
Yeah, no. And obviously, you know, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, Michelin is coming up very soon, announcements. Which
2 weeks, Monday, November 11th. So we'll be all over that.
I feel like all the food news in the past 2 months, or even since that was announced, which was longer than 2 months ago, has really just kind of had this Michelin tinge to it. And which, you know, rightfully so. This is a big deal for Texas. It's a big deal for Houston. I think that, you know, I read through your kind of dissertation after the Chronicle 100 came out, and, you know, kind of read through, you know, your take on that. And, you know, I think that the Chronicle staff obviously has changed in shape and size over the last couple of years as they've been doing this. And I kind of like trying to kind of infer whose addition or a subtraction was whose, right? Like thinking through the personalities of who's writing at the Chronicle and who was kind of steadfast and making sure certain things stayed, and, you know, whose new voice maybe introduced some newcomers. So that's kind of been an interesting, you know, angle for me this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's always kind of interesting to sort of parse this stuff out. You know, the one thing I will say is I hadn't noticed this when I wrote the article, but the top four, Totemo, Katami, March, and Neo, are all kind of defined by their tasting menus, right? Like, obviously, Katami is a sushi restaurant, and so it has an a la carte menu. But, you know, if you sit at the sushi counter, you can have that more personal experience with Hori-san. And I think if you're going to call it the number two restaurant in the city, it's that experience that you're kind of using as the basis for that. So it hadn't occurred to me, but if I were going to do an eighth thing in my observations about the top 100, it's that tasting menus are back, baby.
That's right. I mean, this tasting menus, I guess, for the last couple of years too. I mean, you're right to kind of point that out as those top. It seems like, you know, pizza and tasting menus, if you really want to succeed in Houston in the last 2 years, that's what you're doing, right?
Right, which was one of my sort of weird things about the Chronicle is that it's you know, their pizza selections are almost all Neapolitan, right? Depending on obviously Cultivar is not, but Coastline Pizzeria, El Ro Pizza in Crudo, and Pisana, you know, this restaurant from LA that opened in Houston, are all on the list. It's like there are other, it seems like there are other, there are certainly other styles of pizza that are being made well in Houston, but Allison Cook, I think, fancies herself like a real pizza fan. And just doesn't like, she wrote this very funny review of Gold Tooth Tony's, the Detroit style, and she basically admitted that she just doesn't get it, right? Thick crust, square pie with a lot of toppings. It's just not a style of pizza she likes. And so you're not going to see Gold Tooth Tony's on the top 100. She wrote this kind of weird essay about going to Nono's Family Pizza Tavern with a friend from Chicago, and the friend was sort of underwhelmed, and the, you know, the Gen X charm of it all, that like retro Pizza Hut thing is lost on, maybe lost on someone who's a little older and didn't experience that era in the same way that, that someone who's our age did. And so, you know, no-no-nos
No,
on the Chronicle
no-nos.
Pizza Pist. No,
No,
no-no-nos. Sorry. Sorry,
no.
no-nos.
Well, speaking of other no-nos, you know, you mentioned, I guess they had an August 1st cutoff of what they included. And, you know, we talked about Octo and Octo being kind of one of our favorite meals this year, that at least that we've had together. And did they open before August 1st?
No, they opened like August 6th. So
Okay.
there's a funny kind of that very beginning of August, there's three restaurants I think that might have made it if they had opened at the end of July. Octo is one of them. Credence is another, and then Kira, the hand roll concept from the owners of Neo. So I think they all kind of opened at the very beginning of August, and that August 1st cutoff probably means that they didn't make, they weren't eligible for consideration. But we'll see, you know, there will be best new restaurant lists for me, from certainly, you know, Chelsea the Infatuation will do one. Allison Cook will do one as they do every year. So, you know, stay tuned, right? Like just like Katami opened in the fall, so it wasn't on last year's list. And here it is at number two. So, you know, those are, you know, that always takes a little the time constraints, you know, making sure that a restaurant kind of settles in before you put it on a list like this. That's always a factor.
Yeah, and things like Turner's Cut, obviously, very elevated experience in Houston,
Right.
right?
But Turner's Cut, see, Turner's Cut was eligible, not on the list. You know, Cocote, the French restaurant in River Oaks, was eligible, not on the list. It's like it was kind of a strange to see only three restaurants from that opened this year in the top 25 with MF Lobster and Seafood, and then Basso's in the teens, and Emma, the Mexican breakfast place in the Heights. You know, that's kind of it. And then they're joined by Bar Bluedorn, which opened earlier this year, obviously, and Istio, which opened this summer. And, you know, after that, it's a pretty short list.
I wonder, and it kind of felt to me when I first looked at it, obviously looked at the top 25 because they're ranked first, and then I kind of read through the rest of it, and it almost felt a little chaotic in that almost a victim of committee. It's like you can kind of tell, and that's what I was maybe trying to say earlier, is there's different personalities on that writing staff that are, I think, drastically different in their views on food, and it just felt that way. It's like I'm such a visual person, I pictured the three or four of them kind of in a room on a whiteboard, like debating what should go where, and we're gonna have this one, and we're not gonna have this one, or at least having their criteria and their rubric set to where it was more objective and not subjective, but it felt subjective.
Well, I mean, it's an inherently subjective process, right? Like that's why it's hard to sort of get, you know, like for me personally, I'd say Basso is a top five Houston restaurant right now. But am I going to argue with the Chronicle that they have it at 13 instead of four? Like it seems kind of silly to sort of nitpick it in that way.
But you're a single person, and when you're writing your best new, you don't have three or four other people in your ear debating, right?
No, that's that. That is the nice thing about being me, right? Like I get to do what I want. And I think, you know, I do think that even with the contributions from other people, that the rankings and the priorities reflect Allison's sensibility
Sure.
more than, you know, Bao or Jody Schmale or some of the other people who contributed to the list. I wonder about what the list would be like if, you know, Allison retired or how that would go. I think it would be a, I think it would be different. Certainly ranked differently.
I agree, and maybe that's what I'm trying to say is really feeling like it's very heavy handed, Allison, which rightfully so. I mean, this is her gig, right? But I think adding people like Jody and Bao is evident to me. I mean, I look at this list knowing their writing styles and kind of knowing what they like to follow, and I see those things kind of peeking in there. So, which is a good thing, right? I think that having, you know, a large newspaper, obviously in the fourth largest city in the country, there's room for, you know, food critic. But
Right, but it's interesting because I don't think the audience really knows who those people are. I mean, you know, Bao's been in Houston for a couple of years and he's sort of making his rounds and he's become more known, certainly within the restaurant industry, but I don't know that readers really have a perspective on the kind of
personality.
restaurants that he likes, you know, and they certainly don't know anything about Jody or these two freelance contributors that they recruited to the process. So you know,
Yeah.
Allison, I think, is going to take the credit or the blame for it because that's who people know.
Well, and I think too, Eric, and it's interesting, I didn't really think about this until just now, but the first thing I saw about it was either you or someone else's post saying, well, this is interesting, right? It was like, I wonder how much of the strategy is be super interesting versus being predictable, because there was so much chatter and language around, did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? Well, this is an interesting list, right? There was just so much. I saw more about people that disagreed, more dissent than agreement on, at least online, from what I see, the message boards and Facebook groups that I come into contact with, even, you know, on Instagram, of people sharing things. It was almost like, okay, well, they got a lot of traffic from that dissent.
Yeah, they trolled us. You know, they left Blue Dorn off entirely, I think, and maybe they put Bar Blue Dorn and Navy Blue on there. So maybe that was just, maybe they were just trolling us. Maybe they were just looking for a reaction.
That was Aaron was just a victim of
Yeah,
readership.
Aaron was a victim of rage bait, right? Like,
Don't know. It's I wonder if those things are discussed. You know, look, you're not immune to knowing this, but like newspapers to online and understanding the value of needing eyes to read things. Like, you know, I wonder if some of that stuff gets discussed. Like, is this going to be provocative? Are people going to be talking about this? Is this predictable? Is this too predictable that people aren't going to read it? Do we need to put some bombs in here? So Eric writes a follow-up article about it that links to our article.
right. I don't know that they're looking to us to send them traffic. I think they probably do pretty good numbers on this without my help. But I will say the interest in the list and the way that people were reacting to it, you know, I started getting text messages basically as soon as the thing published, prompted me to want to write something in response. Because I did that in years past. I hadn't done it more recently, but there was this sense that like that I have no problem with Totemo being the best restaurant in Houston. I ate there last week. It's extremely delicious. What Emmanuel's doing right now is, and his team is, it's really smart. It's really thoughtful.
Consistent and
Yeah.
fresh at the same time.
And so I'm fine with that. And I went to March earlier this year, not for the current menu, but for the menu before that, and was just so impressed by that experience. I thought the food was really great. The service is next level. The room is lovely. You want to make that number three cool, you know, and I can go down the list, right? The one thing that, you know, you talked about kind of the social media reaction. But one thing that I've been surprised to see is how many people are like, I've never heard of these places. I've never been to these places. I don't know these places. It's like, I mean, I get that Totemo is small, right? It's a, you know, 16, 18 seats. It's in a strip center, next to a brewery in kind of an obscure part of near Northwest Houston. But if you care about restaurants, right? Like not this audience, not the people that are listening to this podcast. Obviously, they've heard of Temo, they've heard Emmanuel interviewed on the show. We've talked about it extensively, yeah. All of that. But if you're in one of these foodie Facebook groups, like, have you not seen it nominated for 2 James Beard Awards? Have you not seen it get a Food and Wine Best New Chef Award? I mean, all of this stuff has been fodder for conversation. It was, and I think Temo was number 2 last year. So it's not like it made some huge leap into the top spot.
But yeah.
It's just, you know, this reaction of, I've never heard of these places. Well, then you should be paying more attention. Yeah. Or just accept that you don't like restaurants that much, right? It's just not a priority for you.
Or maybe you should filter your Facebook comments before typing them. Go to Google and Google to Temo.
Yeah. Yeah. On some level, it's on you. You know, that if you don't, if you, you know, again, not this audience, not if you're listening to this, you're on the team. But that kind of social media reaction is so bizarre to me that you would sort of flaunt your own ignorance by acknowledging that you're not familiar with these places. It's like, you should get out more. You should try some new things.
And can we talk about Winnie's for a second? Because
yeah, there's a couple that were either in addition to Blue Door that were dropped off the list that I want to mention. So yes, talk about Winnie's.
Man, justice for Winnie's, right? I'm going to make a shirt. I'll just tell you, I enjoy Winnie's so much. It is such a funky, fun Houston concept that's always executed well. And I just don't see how they're not there. Big fan. And that was probably my biggest heartbreak from the list, not being there, you know?
Yeah, justice for Winnie's, justice for Burger Bodega. It was on the list last year and then got dropped off the list this year.
Totally.
Justice for Eunice, that I went to a couple months ago and had a great dinner.
Love it.
So, you know, those were a couple. And then Candente, which I think is the best Tex-Mex restaurant in Houston and has never been on the list. And I don't know what you have to do to get Allison or Bao or somebody back in there to try it and reevaluate it. Because, you know, as they do their checking, it's such a conspicuous omission. And at the same time, you know, I wrote this and I'll say it out loud. I think 11 barbecue restaurants is too many barbecue restaurants. I love barbecue. I eat a lot of barbecue. I have a ton of respect for the people who make barbecue, but 11 is too many.
11's a lot. 11's a lot. And, you know, and you know, Houston's making a run for, you know, best barbecue city in Texas, right? Which we're never going to win, but we're close. But 11 is a lot. And I agree. I mean, things like Winnie's and Burger Bodega and Gold Tooth Tony's and these things that make Houston uniquely Houston, let's really lean into those and definitely recognize the barbecue that needs to be there. I agree with Truth. You know that. I've always thought that. And people like Fijus that are just consistently doing high elevated levels of, you know, fine casual, whatever they call it. Those absolutely deserve to be there. But leaving off some of these others, very Houston unique concepts breaks my heart a little.
You know, I mean, we've spent a little bit of time on this. Anything else before we wrap this up?
I'm looking forward to your kind of end of year best new restaurants, because that's always usually one of my favorite lists of the year. So
It is a competitive year. It's going to be hard to come up. It's going to be hard to get that down to, you know, 10, 11, 12, whatever number I finally decide on. But yeah, it's been a good year for restaurants. I don't think my number one is going to surprise anybody unless something about my opinion dramatically changes between now and mid-December. I don't think my number one's going to surprise anybody.
Really? Okay. I have to think about it, because I do not envy your job in picking that, because just alone this year, you and I have had, I can name on one hand, 5 fantastic meals that we've had. And I know you've had probably quadruple what I have had.
Yeah. And so many new places to try. I mean, we haven't been talking about, you know, Maven and Leo and, you know, I just had T and Matthew from Traveler's Card on that I'm very intrigued by. But yeah, there's a lot. It's been a great year for new restaurants. And you know, maybe Persade, Aaron Bluedorn's second new restaurant of 2024 will sneak in November or December. And then we'll have that to consider too. So yeah, we're not done yet.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, let's move on to topic number 2. Two Montrose staples are closing in November. The first one is Nippon, among the very oldest Japanese-owned restaurants in Houston. It announced that it will close November 15th. Monica, I assume you've been to Nippon once or twice over the years.
Absolutely. I used to live in the museum district and we used to frequent here very often.
You know, I've always, like, not that this is a restaurant I visit frequently, but, you know, for that kind of casual dinner, you know, I've always liked, I've never been upset about going to Nippon. It's been a neighborhood staple for so long. Always had a very dependable crowd.
Yep.
But you know, I was reading the Chronicle. The chef is in his 70s and it's time to retire. And what are you going to do? I mean, it's so, but thankfully they own the building. And so they'll be able to lease it to someone new. And so the building will have new life, but the restaurant is going away.
Yeah. You know what I really appreciate about Nippon, and, you know, you and I have been eating food in Houston for 45 years, 46 years since we were born. It's always felt to me like it's just kind of risen above the trend, the hubbub. It's just been consistently there. It feels very Montrose. You know, when I was little, I grew up near the Heights in Garden Oaks, Oak Forest area. Montrose always felt like this like magical place to me. I had, you know, good, my best friend growing up went to HSPVA and she was in the arts. She lived in the Heights and I always associated Montrose with her and we used to go there with her family. And it just felt, I felt cool in Montrose. And for Nippon to be there and have been there as long as it has been and not really ever fallen, you know, victim to, we got to rebrand and we got to do all the stuff everyone else is doing. It was like, it's just been consistently it. And it's somehow been able to be itself and not be pressured to be anything that it wasn't. So it's kind of, to me, it's just kind of touching that it's been what it has been. And it's just going out when the time is right. And that's a very Houston Montrose thing for me.
I think that's right. I think that's well said. I think this restaurant has had a good run. It's reached the end of its life and it's not some tragedy that it's closing. It's just, you know, this is businesses kind of ebb and flow and this one has had its season and now the family can look forward to enjoying their retirement.
Yeah. Not nice long life. Well lived. Good eulogy. And, you know, I don't think there's anything that, like I said, that I would have wanted different for them. Consistent, you know, people have asked me before, you know, they come to town, I'm in the Montrose area. And of course I always start with new stuff because, you know, it's what Houston is, but Nippon always just being kind of like that consistency is very, very Montrose feeling to me.
Yeah. And if someone were like moving to Montrose and it's like, oh, what should I check out? Like, what are the hidden gems of the neighborhood? I think we would have both sent them to Nippon. Like, oh, you know, you should, like, it's old school. It feels very Japanese inside. The food is consistent. It's reasonably priced relative to some of these newer, flashier sushi spots. Like, you can have a good meal there.
You literally got Uchi, like, almost across the street, so.
Well, down the street a little bit. Like, you know, not quite across the street, but yes.
Right corner.
Yeah. And then I did want to note that Cecil's, the neighborhood bar on West Gray, is tentatively closing November 10th. It's closing soon, one way or the other. Apparently, the property has been sold. Their lease is not going to be extended. I suspect that whole tract is going to get torn down and become something else. But Monica, I've got a bunch of memories of Cecil. So you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I mean, definitely same. We're the same age. You know, we come back from college and probably back into Houston. And to me, that's really that core time of when I used to hang out at Cecil's, your early adulthood, your first kind of dive bar experience back in the city you grew up in, kind of discovering these areas that now you can drink in. That was kind of the Cecil's experience for me. I don't know if you noticed this online. I forget which post I made it on, but Dwight Silverman kind of piped in when I commented. I was like, hasn't Cecil's closed like 7 times? And maybe like mixing it up with they had a fire and then something else that changed ownership. Like, I feel like in the past 10 years, there's Cecil's has been kind of on the chopping block.
It's always been on the break, I think.
But
yeah, I will say this is one of the first bars that I frequented. I worked with a guy at the time who lived close. And so he was a Cecil's regular. And so, you know, after work, we'd go to get a beer. And then I had other friends you know, in my 20s who lived nearby. And so it became like a pretty regular hang, you know, go to a concert downtown, go to Cecil's afterwards for, you know, a couple of cocktails, and then, you know, maybe to West Gray Cafe or whatever for a little, or, you know, Biba's One's a Meal for a little late night sustenance before you finally made your way home. The pool tables, the big patio, the incredibly well-stocked, well-considered jukebox, you know, all just like core memories of hanging out with friends, drinking in Montrose. And yeah, it's been a long time since my last drink at Cecil's. I can't claim to have any current tie to it, but, you know, as I was kind of coming into my own as an adult and, you know, a bar goer, Cecil's was there for me. And so it is a place I will miss quite a bit.
Yeah, no. And PJ's next door really has probably lots more memories or things I can't even remember or recall.
Steak night at PJ's was a thing for sure.
Karaoke at PJ's is such a Houston thing. And I associate PJ's and Cecil's together because they were always kind of joint in my head, visiting one and then the other. But yeah, no, so long Cecil's, and obviously served Houston well, definitely in our generation.
Yeah. And then we'll just topic number three, just briefly, I want to note that Culture Map is holding our Ultimate Wings Showdown right now. It's a tournament style head-to-head bracket, voting for the best wings in the city. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, you can still vote in round two when the matchups are Winnie's versus Big City Wings, Nano's Family Pizza Tavern versus Dream Wings, The Breakfast Club versus Fiji's Barbecue, and Dak and Bop versus Nando's Peri Peri. Monica, I don't know if you're a big wing eater, but do you have your picks for round two?
I'm pretty upset that Nono's is up against Dream Wings because those are two of my faves. You know, Dream Wings is in my hood and I love Dream Wings. I love Nono's too. So that's going to be a tough vote for me.
Yeah, I will say that the wings that I have enjoyed, two of the places that I've enjoyed wings at the most went out in round one. One is Little Ray, which does those like sort of grilled, smoked, super spicy wings with the salsa matcha. Maybe just not enough time for Little Ray's to get the word out about how delicious its wings are. Yep. And then Rooster Vietnamese Grill. I mean, their banh mi are very well known. Their wings are excellent. They're big, they're crispy. They come in a couple of different sauce options. So I was a little bummed. I was a little bummed to see Rooster go out so soon, but you know, it's just fun. I mean, you know, I don't know that we're going to really like the winner of this bracket is going to get anything other than bragging rights. But it was fun for me to put together the list of 16 restaurants that I think serve great wings and just emphasizes, you know, the diversity of how many different styles of wings we have in this town. And, you know, it's a fun, as with all things, Houston's a fun town to eat in.
I will say my 8-year-old, almost 9-year-old, has recently discovered wings thanks to all the football that we watch and all the national advertising from BW3s and Wingstop. So he wants wings a lot, but I don't ever want to go to BW3s or Wingstop. So I do appreciate this list so we can start to kind of expand his palate on some Houston local wings.
Yes, the only like regional chain that I threw in there was Pluckers, just because I think they do a good job, but also like I didn't want my inbox full of UT alums blasting me for not including it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Monica, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Miluna. This is the tapas concept that has reopened. It was in Rice Village for many years. Now it is in the Montrose Collective, where it's right near Octo and Marmo. You know, as we were sitting down to dine at Miluna, you mentioned that you had pretty fond memories of the original location. So why don't you kick things off? I mean, what were you sort of thinking about Miluna, and what were your expectations for it?
As you mentioned, I have fond memories of Milan. It was very nostalgic for me going there, eating that food. So kind of post-college, again, similar to kind of what we talked about with Cecil's, you come back from college, kind of move home to figure out what you're going to do as an adult. And you're thrown into this, like, not a kid, not an adult phase of your life, those early 20s. And for me, at least, that was probably, late 90s, early 2000s, which is when kind of Miluna was peaking in the Rice Village location. And for us and kind of my friend group, it became kind of that cool adult place where you went to eat a bunch of little small plates before you went out dancing, right? It was like the pre-club dining experience. And this, again, this was probably 2001, 2002. Early turn of that millennia. And I don't remember the food a lot because I think a couple of reasons it was 25 years ago. But also, and we were drinking a lot, it was before we went out. But I'll tell you what, and I told you this at at when we were dining, I was blown away by how good all the food that we had there. It was better than I remembered the food being. What I remembered the food being, what I remembered about that experience back in my early 20s was just that, the experience. Friends were there, it was dark, it was plush, we were kind of having fun. You could have put, a crispy or soggy wings in front of me and I probably would have eaten it, right?
Right, you weren't going for the food, right? And that
Exactly.
wasn't really Miluna's appeal, right? It was the environment, it was how affordable it was how lively it was. It's not that the food was ever good or bad. It just wasn't, it was sort of good enough. And we didn't
Exactly.
really think about restaurants in those terms necessarily, in the late 90s and early 2000s. It wasn't, for the most part, how we picked where to go.
Yeah. It was Mama's Cafe. It was, Miluna. It was the places we were going before or after the bar
Yeah,
that, like,
it was Mize. It was
right. That's
One's
right.
a Meal, to reference that for a second time.
Oh my
It's
gosh. Yes. And you're right. We weren't as food obsessed. Either was our age or it was just the time, right? Well, Houston wasn't the travel food destination that it is today. But it's interesting you say that because I feel like I almost had the opposite experience this time. The food was fantastic, and I just kept talking about how good it was, and they let us try a big portion of the menu. But the atmosphere missed a little for me. I was expecting that kind of dark, loud music, pre-club restaurant, plush interiors and pillows, and the way that it felt very kind of Moroccan almost, Mediterranean. I didn't feel that in the space, but the food was fantastic. So it's like it grew up with me in a way that
Right.
supported me where I needed it to be this year, because we were there Wednesday night, so it wasn't that we were getting ready to go clubbing, but we had a fantastic meal.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think the food at least has kind of undergone a glow up, and that makes sense, changing tastes, changing times. And as you said, they sent us all a bunch of stuff. We were a known quantity. Youssef Nasa, the chef and owner, has been a guest on this podcast. He's someone I've known for a few years, and so I was excited to see kind of what he came up with. And it really does check all the boxes for all the kind of staples of dishes that you want at a tapas restaurant, right? You can get the patas bravas and the croquettes and the empanadas and the cold vegetable dishes and the rice dishes and the shrimp scampi and all of that stuff. And it was all very tasty. And I was really happy that we got to go there and have that experience. But like you, I mean, I did find the space to be, maybe there's still some touches that they're adding and it's still new, but the tables are close together. There's, it's kind of difficult to move through the dining room. It's the layout's a little bit strange. It's like, you could tell that it was, they didn't do much to it from the
Design perspective.
picnic days,
Yeah. Yeah. And I wondered if, even when we were there, I think we were there on a Wednesday and they have live music Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. And I even commented to you, I'd really like to come back on a live music night. I wonder if that changes the vibe. Clearly, there was an elevated kind of stage area that they had tables on when we were there, but I'm guessing that's where the band goes. And I'm just wondering, even with the band there, the tables and chairs kind of that we were in the configuration, like I wonder how we would have made that more comfortable or wanted to kind of stay. And again, I'm picturing the old Miluna where it's like there was alcoves and booths and it was plush and pillows were there. And it just felt like you could just stay there all night and eat and drink and imbibe. And I just didn't get that feeling, even though the food was so good. I was craving that maybe nostalgic experience of let's stay all night and hang.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in a different context, like you said, if there were live music going, if we were in a bigger group with friends, if we were on a different night, like if we didn't both have to work in the morning, you know, maybe we could have gotten there. I don't know. But, you know, in terms of having like a pretty delicious dinner with a bunch of little plates, like I think Miluna checked that box. And I think it's interesting now that, you know, you kind of have two sides of a similar coin with it and Octo basically right next to each other in that development. You know, Octo is a little darker, a little sexier, a little more date night with a much smaller menu. And then Miluna is a little, you know, a little brighter, you know, with this huge menu, and it's a little more affordable in terms of its price point. So I think, you know, you kind of pay your money and take your choice, I think.
Yeah. And one of the questions, I don't know if you remember me asking Youssef, was, you know, I was so impressed that the food, everything that we brought out, I mean, we probably had, I'm guessing here,
We had at least a dozen dishes.
At least. I mean, I was thinking closer to even 20 with the desserts and everything we had, about how the kitchen kind of nails that much, that big of a menu every time. And, you know, they were, even though they, you know, they were bringing us stuff, they knew we were there, you know, I felt like it was coming out in a way, it wasn't like they were making it special just for us. I mean, it was coming out very quickly. This kitchen clearly knows what they're doing and they're trained on cooking 30 dishes. And I asked Youssef, you know, is there any staff that's still with you, you know, from those days? And he said, there's one person, one lady who essentially he's been with him for 25, 30 years and kind of maintains that carnal knowledge, right? Of like passing those things down, which I think is just super impressive from an operations perspective. Dishes I remembered eating 25 years ago were much better than I even remembered having, maybe better ingredients or, you know, just the having to kind of keep up with what's going on in Houston. But I would definitely go back for the food. I would love to go back when there's live music just to see if that's maybe a little more vibey. But yeah, interested to see how they'll do next door to Octo, because you're right. It's a very, very different experience, similar food type, Mediterranean. But definitely in a tapas environment too. Again, I keep talking about the old location. Clearly I'm nostalgic for it, but you know, there was like, you would pull up stools and it was a big low table and it just was conducive to small plates and people would come and you'd order some more stuff. And this felt like a very traditional restaurant where you've got two tops and four tops. And yeah, I didn't really notice any booths. Maybe there were some, but bar was very big and lots of, you know, tables, seats around the bar. But I was just, again, craving that kind of communal dining experience that I got from the old Miluna.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. I think, you know, if you're tapas style dining has obviously become a lot more popular, this idea of putting together a meal around a bunch of small plates. I mean, you know, even when we go to a place like Nancy's Hustle or Riel, that's kind of how we do it, right? There's not, you know, it's not entrees. It's not individual appetizers followed by an entree, followed by a dessert. You know, we just kind of piece it together. And so, you know, as the style of dining has become more popular, it doesn't necessarily require a big group anymore. But if you want to put a group together of six or eight, this is a really fun way to, it's a really fun way to dine with that many people. So, you know, and how well they can sort of accommodate that. Like, I admit, I did not like study the dining room that closely to look for, you know, bigger tables. I think like you, I noticed mostly twos and fours. But if that's the biggest quibble is that there's not like big tables anymore, then but the food is way better. Like I think we're gonna let that ride. I think Miluna will take that.
Totally. Yeah. No, nailed what matters, which is the food. And again, just very impressed with the execution of everything we had. And we definitely were full when we left there.
Absolutely. All right, Monica, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Levi Good of Good Company Restaurants and Freedom.